This is the 1111th episode of the SML podcast, which means it's 1111. Make a wish. Right now, I wish I was Bad Bunny's dick. What do you mean, why?
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We've got kind of a slow episode. We've had a couple interviews, and now we got a slow one. Aki's here, Bree's here, and Grant's here. How's everyone doing?
I'm alive.
I'm here for the slow one, baby.
Just chilling on this.
I am stressed as fuck.
On the
It's not slow anymore. It's not slow anymore.
But I had a lovely dinner and some beer. So it'll be okay.
You need more beer?
Cool. I've had beer with no dinner, so it might be even better. We'll see.
Sweet.
I only had the one fat squirrel left. We're out of beer.
Go to the store. Go get more beer. It's only eight there.
No.
Anytime.
No. So yeah, there's a local brewery in Wisconsin, and they have a beer called Fat Squirrel. I totally bought it because
brown
of the name.
Ale.
Yeah, I totally bought it because of the name. But it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I had a couple last night, and I had one tonight, and yeah.
Yummy. Was good.
Having you feeling all right tonight?
Yeah.
What was the question?
Have you feeling all right tonight?
I heard having you feel all right tonight? That's what I heard.
Is it having you feel all right tonight?
All right.
There we go. Perfect.
I'm drinking a Weekend Vibes IPA from Coronado Brewing Company, even though it is absolutely a Tuesday. And not the weekend. And I'm feeling fine. My cat is stressed out, but I'm okay.
Why is your cat stressed?
Because the cat's not allowed in while I podcast.
Why?
Because he jumps all over my keyboard, and like I came in earlier and the cat was on the keyboard and had brought up all kinds of stuff on my computer. Excel was open. It had not been opened in years.
Very nice.
It's just all up in my stuff, likes to claw the sound panels when I'm not looking. So it's just sort of one of those things where I need to, when it's time to work, it's time to work. You feel me?
Oh, I hear a cat.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to like, I guess it's probably when I talk, the mic opens up, but yeah.
Oh, cat
has plenty to say. Yeah. Cat is not happy. Claire is not home yet, so that is why cat is freaking out. Cat, we have these openings above the walls. We live in a weird California house that doesn't have any central air at all. Some houses are built like that out here. So we have these openings at the top, these slits on a wall that faces a hallway, because it allows for circulation because there's no central air. And Cat just somehow scaled the wall and ended up in one of those slits and then screamed at me and then jumped and just knocked over like all kinds of, I got this big Samus statue here. I got all kinds of stuff that could be like, oh, and the cat's up there. Oh my God.
No.
Cat did it again.
Oh no.
Catastrophic.
Holy smokes. It just happened again. Are we all there? Everybody cool?
Yeah. Yep.
We're here.
Oh my God.
Was Bree correct? Wow. Was it catastrophic?
It was. It could have been. Wow. Anyway, this cat is only 5 months old, but is the size of a horse, and it's a problem, I'll just say, at this point. So anyway.
It's the kitty's name.
Otho.
Otho.
Yeah, that's a character from Beetlejuice.
From Beetlejuice?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I shouldn't have said anything if you were actually going to call it. No one knows Otho. He's the troublemaker in Beetlejuice.
Blue green. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a black, somewhat long hair tear. Nice. He's also really sweet and amazing, but he's kind of insane. So, yeah.
I've been very lucky in that talk. Coltrane will run across my keyboard constantly, but she'll always just like step in the open spots on the keyboard. Like by
Super
up, down, lucky. Left, right arrows, and then she'll step on like the front where the wrist guard is. She's really careful to not hit many keys too often.
I don't know how that's possible, but I'm impressed.
I'm very impressed as well. She's my baby. We were very worried because we had a huge storm the other week here, and our two backyard kitties, Callie and Oreo, they ran out of the yard when Ashley was shoveling snow to the gazebo where we have their little shelters. And then it snowed and they didn't come back. And for like 2 weeks, we've been worried about them. And they came back yesterday. And it was massive sigh of relief.
That's great.
Oh, we were so worried about them.
Well, that's good news.
Callie and Oreo are back in our yard. And they're good again. So,
are you just covered in ice at the moment, like other places? Or are you
not so much? Yeah, because it's been like single degrees the past week.
Mm.
It has just been bitterly cold lately, and I think they're calling for like another inch this weekend, an inch or two we might get. But since that big storm, it's just been cold. Nothing's melted. Just frigid.
Happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Today was my first melty day. We were in the 30s today, so it was nice.
Very good.
Hockey's in
Vegas. I have one.
Fuck all y'all.
Yeah. It's been like 60s and 70s for a while now.
Okay. You're in California, right? How's it in your area? Is it nice there?
It's wet. It's wet.
Wet.
Moist. It's all wet. That's it. Yes. Super moist.
We're getting speaking that of bullshit tomorrow.
Yeah, you are. It's coming. We didn't take it all. You can have the rest. Speaking of moist, one Eric Peabody Viking guitar is visiting me for a few days tomorrow,
which
is fun. He's flying in. He's flying in from New York, and he's going to hang out for a while. I will. I'll squeeze him. Like, this is a Joe hug. Nice. Viking guitar is going to visit, so I don't know what we'll do. Probably drink whiskey and talk about Reaper. It's music.
Are you going to play pinball at all? It's probably that for Beardo?
I don't. Oh, that's a Beardo thing. Eric's not too big into like. Not really. I do remember making them go to a pinball arcade that was in New York when we were visited. Make them go, and they had a Rush machine, which he was very intrigued about because Rush is like his favorite band. That's definitely a Beardo thing. Beardo is the other one wearing a pinball shirt at Magfest. He's pin fam, but so, I haven't gotten Eric into it.
The vintage arcade where we're doing the wedding after party, they just got a new machine in. It's the Pulp Fiction
table. Oh, cool. Yeah.
So that's a fun excited one. To play that. So, yeah.
It's a great one. It's really fun because it's a brand new machine, but it's designed like an old one. You know, it's flat and more traditional layout. It's not so confusing. It doesn't have a big LCD screen. It's just got, you know, the old LCD numbers but it's got the subwoofer and the good music, and so I think you'll enjoy it. That's a fun one.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of a ball squad, I'm not even close to the thing for now. Hold on. I'll get the button.
Still loud. My
fucking
fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple more days, we're gonna have Bethesda pinball tables. Are you excited?
Yes, and they're also a part of the pinball VR for the Quest as well.
I'm so hearing on Steam they're not on FX; they're just on M.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know for sure.
I didn't catch that.
I'm trying to see, like, someone on their Facebook page asked for clarification, and they just said they're releasing on Pinball M. They didn't mention FX, so I
okay.
Maybe
there's a ratings thing there.
Hmm. It'd be weird if it's on other platforms, but not Steam. That'd be odd.
Yeah,
I'm excited though. Those three tables were awesome. I'm so pumped to see them come back.
They were. It's interesting. Those are old enough that they still have the back glasses are still like they still emulate that old dot matrix display. You know, like the kind of like remember the old just you know now they have LCD screens in all the games.
Yeah,
in the back. But back in the day, it was like there were dots, like
orange just dots,
red dots. Yes. So these tables are old enough. These were like right at the end of that era. They were still emulating the dot matrix display. It's a little harder to see. Yeah, it's cool. This is a good pack. I'm excited to try that out. I
played them at all. So this will be fresh and shiny and new to me.
Ooh, shiny and new. I remember when Mel came on like 4 years ago and accidentally mentioned that they were working on Bethesda. And now it's finally here.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. What
tables are you excited about, Mel? Oh, well, working on Bethesda, right? No? Shit.
Shit. That's great. I will say this, too. This is not a news night, but I don't know if it's coming out by Thursday, but the teaser went up for Pokemon Pinball by Stern. So that'll be, I don't know how much news there is for Bree to report on should that happen on Thursday, but... we're there. Stern is doing a game themed pin. Well, TV show game themed. He has yet to be seen. Apparently they have a bunch of the TV show licensed for the pinball machine. So,
voice clips, I'd imagine.
I would assume. I mean, I think the scuttlebutt is since we're in it, that it's two voice actors from the series doing call outs. And then they have a bunch of however many episodes worth of footage from the cartoon. So
that's really cool.
I think so. I think so.
More about that.
Some rich Pokemon fans out there are finally going to get into pinball.
What do new tables go for these days? Like 15 grand, something stupid like that.
You can get a Stern
pre-order for the Pokemon is like 10,000.
Oh, is it? They have like three different trims. Let's call them to be like, yeah, like cars. And so I believe the base model is seven and a half or eight.
Yeah, it's like 997 right now.
So. Wow, is it really?
Yeah, 9,700 is what it says for this. Well, this is the premium edition, it says.
So oh, that's the premium one. Yeah, that's like the middle one. So there's like one for seven, one for like 9 or 10, and then one for like 12 or 13.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you doing music for any of them?
For what? For any of these? For Pokemon? Yeah,
Pokemon. No.
No.
You have any more pinball tables in the works?
I'm working on that. Making that happen. We'll see. See how it goes. It is my intent to do another. So that's what I'll say.
Is that like your dream accomplishment that you finally got on a pinball table?
I don't know what it would be. As far as like being a part of another IP. Someone might be like, is it your dream to be in a Metroid game? Not really, because I don't write music that sounds like it belongs in a Metroid game. You know what I mean? But pinball is definitely that would be really rad. I definitely have the themes I would want to write music for too. Like I feel like I would love to write. I don't think it's going to happen because Tom Cruise kind of sucks, but I wish they'd make a Top Gun pinball machine. I just feel like that would be a really, really good one. And I would love to make the music for Top Gun Pinball. I don't know why I'm stuck on that specifically, but I just feel like that would be a lot of fun.
Do you have contacts at Pinball Studios? Make it happen.
It's not the Pinball Studios that are the problem. It's Sir Cruise.
Be like, what's up, Mr. Cruise?
Mr. Top Gun himself. I'm an Iceman stan anyway. Fuck Maverick. Whatever. Iceman for life. Anyway.
Good stuff.
I'm a Hot Shots guy.
It took me a minute. Yes, I'm also a Hot Shots guy. There should be a Hot Shots pit. We need to get more. We need more comedy in pinball these days. Am I right? We need to get some like. Oh, anyway,
a two pack Hot Shots and Part Deux, where they're both completely different pinball tables.
Yes. Yep. Or you could just put in a code and unlock like Hot Shots mode or something.
That would be pretty fantastic.
I've seen Hot Shots.
Yeah, that was funny. Is that 90s? Is that 90s?
Yeah.
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 That was like peak comedy growing up. That shit, Naked Gun movies.
Yeah, like Robin Hood Men in Tights and all that. And all that.
Oh,
yeah,
Mel Brooks.
All very special.
We recently watched that new Naked Gun movie, and it was not terrible.
I agree. I
really enjoyed the new one.
The jokes per minute were pretty good. I was yeah. impressed. Yeah, I liked it.
The fight scene at the end had me rolling. Like, that's the most realistic fight scene I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
I have one game-related thing to share.
What you got?
I'm like steeping in Darksiders right now, big time. I finished Darksiders 2 because it had been 12 years or 14 years or whatever. And then I didn't enjoy 3 because I don't really do Souls stuff. And it's kind of a Souls ripoff game. Mm-hmm. But I never played Darksiders Genesis, which is like a sort of an isometric view, but it controls like a Darksiders game, like a Zelda game. So I'm in the middle of that right now, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Did anyone end up playing Darksiders Genesis at all? Does that sound familiar to anyone? Nope. Okay.
Yeah, I played a little.
Did you review it? Yeah.
Not much.
I think Aki is my Darksiders person on this pod. But did you give it good marks?
Basically all of them.
Yeah. Did you give it good marks? Do you remember liking Genesis?
Oh yeah, it was great fun. I think I'm like one achievement from having that 100%ed.
Wow. I like it a lot so far. Big fan.
Yeah, it's great fun. Yeah. You're just going to eventually reach a really, really hard area, and good luck getting that last achievement.
Oh, well. And what is the achievement for, like, no death or something? Like, what's the achievement for?
No, you end up having to get through this little maze thing using all your abilities and stuff to reach an item that you need to get the last achievement or something like that. And fuck me, it's so goddamn hard. I spent literal days doing nothing but that one thing, and I never got it, and I haven't played in forever, and chances are if I were to load it up right now, I'd either spend more days doing it, or I'd get it first try and be like, what the fuck was I doing this whole time? And then I'm going to feel bad either way, so.
You're just saving up all the juice.
No, I do not.
Like shit either way, you have it installing now, right? Yeah.
You know what, fuck it, I might as well. Goddamn. I have 8 gigs. Wow. I think it's probably big enough that I can install it, maybe, possibly. I don't know how big that game is anymore.
Not that big. I don't know. That one's the
small one, so I figure it might be within 8 gigs, maybe. With my luck, it's like 11, and I'm still going to be fucked. Because I have 8.9 gigs free.
Well, you could find stuff to do.
Yeah, you might be fucked.
I don't have very much installed. It's the really painful thing here. Almost everything I have installed is review games that I'm currently working on and a couple games that I'm trying to finish before I leave here.
And they're all Ubisoft, and they all take up 100 gig.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. yes, you are not wrong.
I know.
I'm always right. I know.
Letter...
So I'm just really interested to see what this next Darksiders is going to be, because the four games are the four horsemen, right? It's play as War, and then Death, and then Fury, and then Strife. So what are you going to do in the next one? I don't know.
I was right. It is 11 gigs. You've got to be 11? Fucking kidding me.
Oh, wow. Yep. You can find 2 gigs to offload.
What can I delete here? What can I delete?
I can't believe I'm getting Aki back on the Darksiders bullshit. That wasn't my intention, but I'll take it.
What all do you have installed? What are the candidates for deletion?
I have Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, and I need to finish off 2 DLC to finish that game.
Yeah, did you try the third-person mode in that game?
Yeah, I don't particularly like it personally.
Yeah,
I prefer first-person.
Not the best.
Yeah. Escape from Ever After that I'm just trying to finish. No Sleep for Kamidate, Planet.
What? That doesn't exist yet.
Nah.
That was a demo. That was a demo.
Yeah, totally. Carmageddon, Reloaded, Kill It With Fire 2, Graceful, and Assassin's Creed Shadows. As I said, almost everything on here is a review game.
Shadows, you could probably kill the DLC.
No. Because if I delete the DLC, it fucks up the save.
Does it?
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I know I just never installed the DLC for it because it's huge and you can't play it until you beat the game. So why install it?
Well, I finished all of them. I actually have to play through the game an entire second time to get the last two achievements.
Chop, chop.
I'm missing two achievements in it now. It took me about 200 hours to finish the game.
Well, yeah, there's no chop, chop. You just have to speed run it through. You don't have to do all the side stuff again.
I might be able to speed run one of the achievements. The other one actually does require you to do all the side stuff again. Because there's an achievement for collecting two golden weapons that are special weapons. You get that for actually completing the main story, which is something I could probably do in like within 10 hours. I can easily get that done. But then there's also an achievement for getting to level 10 knowledge, and that requires me to do all of a couple different types of side quest things all over again through the entire game. So I have to go to every one of the regions find all of these all over again.
Does it not count your first playthrough, or is it just that high of a level that you have to do it twice?
Oh, you have to go through and get all of them two different times in order to actually get to that number. So I've done them all in the first game, but I'm at like level 7 or 8, and now I have to play through the entire thing again and reobtain them all to get to 10, because it keeps track of all the knowledge points that you got the first time. Now you have to go and collect them again, so you have twice as many.
So you're just a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, basically. Thankfully, they're not hard to do. It's just time consuming as shit, because I have to go and find them all over again. Like, nothing about these two achievements is hard. They're both extremely easy. It's just, I have to go and redo it all over again. And it just takes a lot of time to do. That's all it is. It's just time consuming. Nothing else.
I don't have that kind of time anymore. Makes me not want to play those games.
That is very fair. I would not suggest, Mirage is the one I would suggest if you don't have a lot of time. Because that was a nice short experience.
They added DLC to that, though. Like today.
Yeah, and I need to play that. Wait, today? I knew they had a while ago.
Maybe it was maybe it wasn't today. Maybe it was just that I noticed it today. But
maybe they added a DLC like mid late last year.
The only email I got from Ubisoft today was, "Hey, Avatar's going in Game Pass."
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Maybe I just noticed it today for the first time. I don't know.
By the way, did you get that email from Ubisoft? You could get 7 days of Game Pass they're offering.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't get
probably just if you're. It's probably only if you're not currently a subscriber, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
It's to help promote it being on Game Pass.
Yeah, sure.
Because it is on Game Pass soon. Not now. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Literally Carmageddon. Fuck Carmageddon. I've played that enough. I'm doing that review today.
You
I don't
can't
need that
say
game all
fuck
night.
Carmageddon when we're about to review it. I mean, you should at least wait until afterwards if you have a verdict on.
It's not a verdict. That's just I need room, so it can go to hell because I need room, and it's not quite
Did
the
you
smallest
it?
Game. No, God, no. That's going to take a while.
You could.
That's going to take a long fucking while. No, I'm actively working on that every day. Actually, I know that. So that's the only reason I'm keeping Kill It With Fire on, or else I would delete that. But I'm actively working on that. I think someone got that for me recently or something, and I decided I wanted to try and finish it. I didn't think it would take that damn long. It's taken a lot longer than I thought it'd take.
I was going to say, Kill It With Fire 2 is a bit meatier than the original game.
Yeah, just a little bit. So once that's gone, once that's done, I'll probably get rid of it, and I'll probably reinstall Carmageddon, actually. Unless I get another review game that I need to put on here. Because I do want to beat Carmageddon. I don't think I'll be able to do that before I leave my grandparents' house, but maybe. We'll find out.
I'm just going to say, having a Series S and picking two Ubisoft games is... That's like...
Stupid.
Playing hard mode right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I had just done Avatar's Frontiers of Pandora instead of Assassin's Creed Shadows, I would have already have had this done and deleted a while ago. I really wanted to play Assassin's Creed.
Is it done?
It was. What?
Not Dark completed, Slayers? But are you done with, like, Assassin's Creed? Or are you going to play it more?
Oh, I'm definitely going to play it more. I'm going to get as far into it for my second playthrough as I can before I leave. And then I'm done with it until I get back here in winter.
I'm looking at my Series S right now. Granted, I have the 1 terabyte, but even still, I have 172 games on mine. You know why? Because I don't have 100 gig games on my Series S.
Yeah, you have 100 and something. I have 9.
Biggest game is 22 gig, and that's Lost Odyssey, which is a 360 game.
Yes, it is. I was like, do they remake that? That's funny. Also, that's big for an old game.
My biggest is 148.8, which is Assassin's Creed Shadows.
Oh, Horizon 5 is like 170 something.
Yes, it was like Horizon 5 is massive.
I think I finally, something crazy.
Yeah, I did uninstall that finally just to make some room for other stuff. I held on forever. Now I just care about the new one.
Yeah, and Avatar is 124.
You have 50 what? 50 games?
I only have 50 games installed right
on
now.
On what?
On my Series X.
Oh, gosh, I don't have that many.
I have a fuck ton of games installed.
X is kind of gross because I have the 2 terabyte system with the 4 terabyte expansion card and a 5 terabyte USB drive that I
hold. Oh my god!
Like literally all the Xbox 360 games on.
Oh, I could have tons installed. I have an expansion card and all that jazz. I just decided I didn't want all the things installed anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm sitting at 1900.
Damn.
That's because of the 5 terabyte, though. If I unplug that, that's like 900,000 gone right there.
I have about 3 minutes left before Darksiders Genesis is installed.
Wow. There we are.
Well,
good luck.
Should we move on to reviews then, since you have shit to do?
Sure. I mean, once this is installed, I'm going to be playing it while I'm doing everything.
Yeah. Do you do reviews of achievements? Because I'd love to hear Aki's review of just this achievement. You know what I mean? Just like this one.
We don't. But if you ever have a question about any achievement I have, I've memorized basically every one of my games, and I can give you the gist of once I look up what the achievement was for, I can tell you how fucking annoying it was.
Oh dear.
I'm really good at that.
So, first game to talk about. How do you move on from that? I don't know. First game to talk about tonight, Carmageddon Rogue Shift, developed and published by 34 Big Things, released February 6th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $39.99. The year is 2050, and the world you know is a post-apocalyptic wasteland. Hey, 14 years away, we're getting there. Hordes of nightmare creatures. Oh, 20. I'm bad at math. Hordes of nightmare creatures, the wasted, lay siege to humanity. Every night the streets are overrun, forcing everyone to barricade themselves in their skyscraper homes for survival. There's just one chance to escape all this, the Carmageddon. These deadly races promise power, prestige, and valuable prizes to the participants. Most importantly, the champion wins the right to attempt the perilous journey that leads to the spaceport beyond the mountains. The only one left? The only chance to flee this dying world. Brent, Bree, Aki, everyone covered this. Brent, how about you start us off and tell us about your time with Carmageddon Rogue Shift?
Sure. Well, just to set up the kind of game it is, we are talking about a formula that is very different than the original Carmageddon. We learned a lot from that interview, which was really cool. We did last week, I guess. That dropped a couple days ago. Last episode
you could check out now.
Yeah. Yep. 34 Big Things, Italian team. And so basically it's the crew that made the Redout games, and they have the opportunity to do something for this license. So Carmageddon is an old school vehicular combat comedy game from the late 90s with various sequels to varying degrees of success. I was a massive Carmageddon fan, myself and my brother. It was just really stupid, really silly, but had really good physics and really good car damage. So they have basically taken the idea of Carmageddon and turned it into a roguelike. So it's a roguelike racer where you sort of select your path down a series of tracks, similar to something you might see in like Outrun, where there are forks in the road. You can choose which path you might want to take, which will lead you to different kinds of garages and different races of different difficulties. And then you with boss fights at the end of each world, and you race until you die, and then you go back to the beginning. And there's a certain amount of there's some permanent currency that allows you to then upgrade your vehicle. And your driver and other elements to then start over again and attempt to beat Carmageddon, slightly upgraded. So very the traditional roguelike formula. And it's a really interesting take, I think, on racing. I have not played a roguelike racing game before. I kind of want to play more. I want to see what's out there because I think it's a really interesting idea. It's sort of, the idea of playing arcade racing games were always roguelikes. They were always like start from the beginning. How far can you get? And it's all about, passing the checkpoints and getting time, but it was always there to steal your quarters. But what if you could upgrade yourself just a little bit at a time, every single time, and eventually beat the money hungry game developers, right? Actually make it through these games without being a god at them. That's kind of the idea they've taken here. And so we've been playing. I don't know. Bree, you got any quick thoughts on your time with Carmageddon?
So, I just kind of commenting on like things that you were just saying. Like, I thought like the runs or the race path had like a pretty clear progression, but it got a little repetitive for me because I really sucked at the game. I did like the like permanent upgrades. The black market catalog upgrade path was clearly inspired by Helldivers 2, and that was easy for me to follow because I've already kind of gotten into that. But I'm not a big roguelike person. It was an interesting thing to kind of mash into that genre of like Destruction Racer, and it was definitely an interesting twist or shift, if you will.
She was serious, Joe. That was, she was being serious. I don't know what you're laughing at. I don't know what you're laughing at.
I'm sorry. It was uncalled for. I agree. I really like the whole Helldivers aspect to the upgrades, the layout and the tiers and the progression. I think that's a really cool way that Helldivers and a cool progression system that they brought into gaming, and it's nice to see another game kind of like build off of it and do their own thing with it. I would love to see more of those things arrive via DLC and updates, that you could get more cars and weapons and see what else they could come up with, but I guess it depends on whether the game is successful or not. Hockey, sure. What are your thoughts on Rogue Shift?
It was pretty fun. I rather enjoyed it. The only complaint that I had with the entire thing was that the enemies, you get to blow them all to hell, which is fun, but then they come back. But if you get blown to hell even once, you don't, and that makes me sad. I want to beat the game by killing all the other people and always coming in first. That would be awesome. But they always respond. It's like, oh, well, you guys can just go suck a dick, can't you? And good point. Then they kill me and I'm just dead. And it's like, oh, what the hell?
That's a good point.
I have a thing that irritated me, actually, kind of on Aki's behalf. That it was the first time you launched the game, you're immediately thrown into this tutorial intro sequence where you kind of have to finish the race mm-hmm. before you get to any of the settings options. And then immediately after, it's like, oh, hey, big time photosensitivity warning. And then you can adjust settings that make that accessible for people like Augie.
Oh, fascinating.
I don't even remember the training level anymore.
Yeah, but like once you get through the settings, they have some decent options available, like alternate and or customizable control schemes. They've got like available adjustments for like field of vision or field of view, motion blur, color vision deficiencies, camera shake, even game speed. So, I mean, like there's plenty to fiddle with. I just thought it was like an odd choice to like wait for the photo sensitivity warning and all the settings until after that first tutorial race.
I thought the warning came first. I know the settings came after, but I'm pretty sure the warning came first.
Yeah, not for me. It didn't. Huh. I thought that was a little weird. Yeah.
Very odd.
Yeah.
Well, Grant, any other thoughts that you want to add to the game?
Yeah. I do. I actually like, I feel like there's a lot I really, really enjoy about this game. And I kept trying to think of where, and I would get stuck to it. I would do several runs in a row, then do several runs the next day, and I've made incremental progress. And I think that if I had I think that a lot of people are having, I think that all the parts are here, but I think that the physics and the control of your vehicle are, difficult. They are you're controlling really heavy machines that are going very, very fast. And it's really easy to get turned around. It's really easy to, there's a thing that racing games do with heavy vehicles where when you steer, there's a bit of a delay in your car steering. It's how you handle things to make things feel more real in games like Horizon and stuff like that. But with a game that involves this much combat and that feels as twitch and is as high energy as this, I feel like they could have worked a bit to try and make the handling feel more friendly. So when you spin out, you aren't so frustrated, or have the perks increase handling for all vehicles incrementally over time. So you just keep feeling more and more nimble as you play. I feel like you're this heavy lumbering brick, no matter which car you get. I ended up landing on a car that had the laser as a default, and it was pretty spry, but still was heavy as hell. And I know that in the cars, your car should have weight and everything. But I think like there's, if the game was Twisted Metal levels of fast and fun, like unreasonably strange physics happening just for the sake of having full control over everything at all times, I think that there'd be a bit, people would be a little less critical on the actual gameplay experience. That's my take. That's the one thing I think they could have eased up on. They like in the car descriptions, they talk about the rear wheel drive versus the front wheel drive. And that stuff is super important. If you don't know how to drive a rear wheel drive car in a simulator, don't even bother because they're a mess. Like you're going to oversteer constantly and run. Like it's insane trying to control a rear wheel drive car in a racing game. And they pride themselves on that. But this isn't a sim, you know what I mean? This is an arcade game. So I feel like they could have dialed that back just a little bit to ease people in, or at least have like a physics-friendly option. Like, here's the arcade mode versus the kind of like heavy sim lumbering, sim-heavier. Yeah. But man, I love the way...
in a zombie game.
Yes, exactly. Yes, in a zombie game where you mow through 100 zombies this round to get extra money. Love the weapons. I love the fact that they're one tap. You don't have to hold buttons down. You tap them so you can control and drive. You can concentrate on driving. I think there's some really fun stuff they do in here. But in the end, as far as it being fun to play, I do think that for people who aren't car game people, and I happen to be a car game person, I can see why it would be a bit of a turnoff and is hard, even on lower difficulty settings. So
it is
a tough game. That's my big critique. It is a tough game. Yeah, for sure. But Marie, I did enjoy my thoughts? Time with it.
So, yeah, I think Grant just really kind of put all the things into voice that I probably couldn't, because I struggled with driving controls, even in easy mode. But I think for me, and I mentioned this, I think earlier, that I thought some of it was a little repetitive, like there weren't as many race types as I would like. But also I was repeating the same thing over and over a lot because I was pretty terrible. So where I just kind of wanted to drive over things and relieve some stress, like I found a roguelike system in place that I just wasn't as interested in. It was a neat genre blend. And I also only have the reputation or legend of Carmageddon franchise to compare it to. Like I never played any of the original games. So I also don't know what I'm missing out on. Teak, please get down. So yeah. Oh. But no, it was like a really well made game. I just don't know that it was for me.
Sure. Yeah.
The graphics were good. The music was really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, the music was fun. The original game is how I discovered Fear Factory. It was the manufacturer era Fear Factory, like 1997. So, you know,
they were my first concert.
Is that right?
Fear Factory, Static X, and Dope.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's a vibe, Joe.
Number one.
Man.
Billy Electric wow. Factory.
Crazy. In a place called the Electric Factory, no less.
Yeah.
Rad. Well, yeah, I mean, they, you know, the thing about the old Carmageddon is they were these heavy lumbering cars that you didn't have weapons in the old Carmageddon. You could get them in pickups, but it was mostly just like slamming into cars and pedestrians and trying to destroy. You could either race or destroy each other were your options. Of course, most people wouldn't do the races. They would just like, you know, run into each other. So they kept that. But this is a very different format. This is very much a racing game. You can't kill everyone because they just come back to life, as Aki said. So, you know, it's some interesting choices. But I had fun with it. I think that it's may not be for everyone, and the price is what it is. But I did have a good time with Carmageddon Rogue Shift.
All right. Well, let's talk about the price. It clocks in at $40. I need some verdicts. What do y'all think?
I could definitely give it a try. Again, I feel like the game was there. The game did what it was supposed to do. There were definitely points of interest and familiarity, and yet, like, you know, it had its own feel to it, mixing up genres and that sort of thing. But it just ultimately wasn't for me. So I think Triad's like, I think it's good. I think the price is decent for what it is. Just wasn't personally for me.
Grant.
I'll give it a try. Try it or wait for sale. I hope they are able to continue to tweak it. I hope that they are able to perhaps include multiplayer at some point, if in fact the game does well, because this game would be perfect for something like that. But I did enjoy my time with it, but I do know it isn't for everyone. So if you're able to do your research, if you're a car lover, I think it'd be a lot of fun. If you're a Carmageddon fan, I think it's a lot of fun, but it's definitely not for everybody.
Aki, what about you?
I am totally for it. I love the game. I am not particularly amazing at the game, but I do rather enjoy it. It's real fun. Totally buy it.
Cool. And what makes you happier, this game or Darksiders Genesis getting extra achievements?
Probably Carmageddon at this point. It's not have 5 achievements to get on this bitch, and I am not stoked about that.
Oh, extra? There's new ones
that you didn't. I think so, because I think I only had one left, which was for getting like the Leviathan landing core or something.
And well, now here's a way to tell. What's 5. The total?
Give me a second. I think it's 30 now.
No, yeah, point 30, wise.
It says.
Point wise.
Oh, 1K. No, apparently I had 5 achievements left to get then. What the fuck? How do we end this and still have 5 achievements left? Like, I understood one of them because it's reaching the end of the Leviathan's landing gets you one of the cores that you need, and I was trying to do that and I couldn't do that. The fuck do I have other. This is upsetting. It's been a long time since I've played this. Oh no!
One of the things I'll mention about this company that made Carmageddon too, they have some legacy with racers too. If you're interested in racing games, check out some of the other games they have. They did the Redout games, which are fantastic. Like, let's call them alternative futuristic racing games. If you're a fan of Wipeout or F-Zero, I feel like they did, in fact, accomplish what the game that set out to make. With Carmageddon, I'm interested to see what they do next, but definitely check out some Redout and some of the other stuff on their list. And, hell, you know, yeah. Goat of Duty, is that something
golf game back?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Man. All right. Grant, cool. Are you going to stick around or are you going to head out?
Yeah, I'll hang for a bit. I want to hear at least a few reviews, then I'll probably dip.
Cool. Well, we have a preview we got to tackle next called Black Zen White, developed and published by 24M Squared Studio, releasing sometime this year on Steam. Black Zen White is a relaxing puzzle platformer where the world flips every 10 seconds between two versions, black and white. Think, time your moves, bend time, interact with strange creatures in this contemplative hand-drawn journey inspired by East Asian ink paintings for 1 to 2 players. Aki and Bree, both you previewed this. The dev was nice enough to hook us up with some beefy demo codes for it. The current demo on Steam is, what, like 20-ish stages?
I think it's
somewhere around there.
Something like that.
It gets you to level 30, but it does skip some levels in there. Yeah. So I think it's probably thereabouts of that.
Yeah.
So what do you two think of Black Zen White? What is this game? Who wants to start off?
I'll let Aki go for once.
Yeah. Okay. This is a puzzle platformer, I guess we'll call it. You play as this little square that that's a stamp that's red, and you're trying to get yourself into this warp hole, basically. And for this, you're finding other large stamp blocks that you get to move around, as well as jump pads that can fling you to different places. And occasionally you're also finding two halves of a circle that combine together and open a portal for you. Occasionally, usually in most of the levels, it seems like the portal's already there. You just have to find a way to get to it. But while this is going on, the platforms and everything switch from red to black, or red from white to black. And whilst that doesn't impact a lot of things, usually, sometimes one of the sets of platforms will be one color and that whole platform doesn't exist when it flips to a different color. So you have what basically amounts to two different platforming areas that you have access to, and you use one to help you get to the next one, so on and so forth. So like you might have some jumps in an order. You have to make 5 jumps in a row to get to this area. Well, 2 of the jumps might constantly be there, whether it's white or black, and the other 3, one or two of them might be in the black one, one might be in the white one, so you have to time your jumps, which is kind of fun. And yeah, that's really the gist of this. The standard demo, as Joe said, gives you around 15, 20 levels thereabouts. The last level it lets you play is level 30. And we got a specialized demo to work on, and that got us closer to like 45-ish levels.
I think I had like 75 levels in mine, but yeah, I might have skipped a few, so I don't know if there was exactly that many, but yeah.
I'm guessing it skips over some number so that it's not...
Yeah, it does. It does give you a good chunk of them, though.
You were saying how impressed you were at how big the demo was.
Like even the standard demo is actually pretty decently sized, to be honest. But then the demo they gave us was fucking gigantic. I know it went to at least level 60. I thought level 60 is where it ended. I don't know if Bree got the full game or if she also got a demo, and maybe demo, I just didn't look far enough, and it actually had more than I thought. But like going even to level 60, that's a lot, because in the demo we got, it skipped less of the numbers even. So it feels like we got almost the entire game. We might be missing
because 10-ish full levels. Full game is over 100 levels.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. With
so much.
5 to 7 hours of playtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of the I skipped around and was trying to work on some levels with switches later on, and they get pretty difficult. Actually, there was a level earlier on which is probably one of the most creative ones, I'm trying to find my note, but it was a pinball. It was called Pinball Wizard was the name of the level. And it was set up like you had to jump on a little platform and knock another box off and then move that up through the pinball using different bouncing techniques, the little bounce pads. So you had to like figure out how to move this one box like a ball across. Teak, goodness, calm down.
You have to move the ball across, Teak? What?
Yes. But no, it was, and some of the levels were like real head scratchers too.
Wow. We don't know when the game is coming out. They said the planned release date is sometime this year. All we can do right now is, determine whether this is worth, adding to our wish list, following or ignoring. Of course, people can always hit the Steam page and check out the demo yourself. Play the first handful of levels. What do you two think of this one? Should people follow this one? Wishlist it?
I think wishlisting is a good idea if you're into puzzle games. This is pretty interesting. There's also like a little bit of comedy in this as well. Like they're just even the sound effects made me giggle every time you jump. There's like a little hop kind of noise and there's like a little every time you hit the exit gate because it's like a little spiral thing that's pulling you in. The art was really cool. You have like the first like 30 levels or so are like beautiful hand painted Japanese calligraphy and illumination. Like it's got the black and white with a splash of pink or red. There's like falling cherry blossoms in some of them. There's bamboo groves. It's really pretty. And then you get like other East Asian art later with like jungle levels in the night sky. And it was cool stuff.
Aki, your thoughts?
I thought it was pretty and it's long. That's what really worries me is just how long it is. Like these are fun, but that's a lot. That is so much.
Oh no, too much game.
Yeah,
too many levels. Sometimes that kind of is a thing. But no, I definitely think it's worth buying. I thought it was a really good game.
We'll see how things turn out when the final product rolls along later this year, and hopefully we will be able to take a look at the final game when it's ready to go.
Yeah, I'm looking Thanks forward to it.
All right. Bree, I guess you were going to be heading out. You're tagging out as Pernell is tagging in. Pernell, how are you doing?
All right. Tired and drunk. How you doing?
Tired and drunk?
A little bit of both. I'm not drunk, but
Bree, go get more beer.
I'm out of beer. I had all the beer in the house. I have to open the champagne or something.
Open the champagne. Yes.
Celebrate.
Get into the hard liquor. I don't know.
It's a celebration. Yeah.
It is.
Aki, go get some drinks.
Well, hi, Pernell. Great.
Go get some drinks.
Hi, Bree. How you doing?
I have one.
I'm all right, I guess. How are you? Besides tired and drunk, you good?
I'm hanging tough, more or less, not a good. Generally, not a good week for me. But at the end of the day,
can't complain, but
so much.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, solidarity, friend.
All right, fist bump.
Yeah, fist right.
Bump. Whatever that looks like.
To the ages.
Yeah.
All digital right. Fist bump. Well, you know.
It was lovely to hang out with all of you, but I am going to bounce, work on all some right. reviews, and get some stuff done around the house.
Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Fat squirrel.
Yeah.
That squirrel's had it. What?
You'll have to listen to the show for now. Yeah, you'll have to listen.
Oh, fat squirrel.
Right. Have a good one, everyone.
See you later. Pernell, how's your evening going? How was board game night?
It went well. It was a little quieter than usual, but I can attribute that to the snow on the ground and people probably sick as all get out too. So, but we had a fair number of people and games were played. People enjoyed themselves. So what more could I want?
What'd you play?
Well, I played Honey Buzz and it took way too damn long, but it was fun. And then I played Buzz? Scout to wrap up the night. Mm-hmm. It's a bee economy where you're basically drafting and pulling tiles to create hives, to produce honey, to sell to a market, and fulfill orders and such. It's like a cool little game.
Well, what letter grade would you give it?
I don't grade games, you know. It's fun.
I don't know, like a
fun. It's a fun out of 10.
That's right. It's a buy. Yeah.
5 out of 7. Nearly perfect.
That's right. Well, not a flat out of 7. It's a buy. I mean, I can say
that. Does anyone know the 5 out of 7 joke, or am I the only one who?
No.
Ugh. You gotta look that up.
I don't think I'm old enough to know. You're so old.
I'm ancient, and I don't Facebook. Know. So it's not an Shut age up. Thing.
It's the guy who's like, oh, I think that's a great film. I give it like a 5 out of 7. Like, what kind of rating scale do you use? Like, that's like a perfect score. What?
I can respect these basically saying ratings suck. Here's a 5 out of 7. I don't know. Or that, or maybe he just didn't think there was 10 degrees worth of rating.
Oh, no. You'll have to look it up after the show. It's some humor in there.
Being a cornball.
Good humor in there. No, the guy making fun of him was being the cornball. This guy was just weird.
Oh.
Yeah.
Tell her me interested then.
Yeah. Anyway, we got some more games to talk about. Should we knock these out?
Sure. I was going to ask how y'all evenings went, but I also bet people were like, y'all, we've been here an hour. Get the hell on with it.
Yeah. Hey, we're chilling. We had a little discussion on Discord before we went live, and then we chatted about some pinball and we did some reviews, and then you popped in.
Talking about pinball, Mannington.
Indeed.
It's all the new hotness.
It is.
I do like new hotness. New hotness makes me feel like a good man.
Yeah.
Too much good new hotness, and for me, I need more time in my life. I need a time machine, some sort of...
We all do.
Time manipulation contraption.
I just want more
sleep. If I had a time machine... I want more time to play video games.
Okay, Aki can continue playing video games and doing the show. The rest of us are going to take a nap.
That's right.
Yeah, basically.
That's the price he has to pay for being so young compared to the rest of us.
Indeed.
It's fine with me. Well,
four more games. Should we knock these out?
Show them. Sure.
All right, let's plow through them. Next up, Lovish, developed by Matt Kapp and Labsworks, published by Dangan Entertainment, released February 5th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Sir Solomon and the Saviors of Light depart Castle Cornelius to free Princess Suna from the grasp of the evil Devil Lord. That's a hell of a sentence. But the knight is worried. What if after being freed, the princess falls in love with one of his friends instead of with him? So he does what anyone would do when blinded by love, and he ditches his friends. Solomon ventures into the Devil Lord's castle alone, vowing to steal the princess's heart. Pernell, what is going on in Lovish?
So Lovish is a adventure platforming game that can be compared to old classics like Solomon's Key or whatever, in the sense that every level in the game is consistent of one room, no scrolling, just a room, just a door, and a need to exit through that door. Your main character is a knight who can do some very basic things outright. He can jump, he can slash. That's all he does for the time being. That's all he needs to do for the time being. We enter a level. There is a clock that ticks, though you're not actually being punished for. It's just like a timer that gives you, like, you know, best ranking or whatever. And your goal is to get from one end to the other. Find the exit. Sometimes the exit might require you to locate a key or pull off some series of switches or fulfill a condition to open the door. But ultimately, the goal is the same. Open the door and pass through it, which will in turn unlock the next level. And then the next level until you fight bosses, and then you'll do it again. However, if it was as simple as that, there won't be a whole lot to talk about in this game. And admittedly, there still isn't a ton to talk about because the game is just great in its own right. But there are a few interesting caveats that make it particularly special. For one, as you're running through the level of the game, you have a total number of hit points that are associated with you throughout the entire journey. If you die in a level, you potentially can lose a hit point. But in addition to that, after each stage you complete, an event will occur. And these can be very weird things that can happen, and they can also be very boilerplate things that can happen. And even if you replay a level, you'll still be engaging in one of these events. When you perform the level and complete it, you'll have the event occur. You might get a choice. You'll definitely get some kind of like a light narrative. So, for example, you might get to a cinema and the main character freaks the heck out. Turns out the main character bumps into a game developer. And the game developer will say, this game needs more NFTs. And then your character will perform super kick and kick him in the butt. And that's the event. Something like that is just an event that just gives you a nice chuckle. Nothing related to progression. But other times you'll get stranger things. Like a situation where you might have to dodge a series of enemies that are coming at you. You might get a weird survivors-like event where monsters are coming at you from all sides. And if you fail these events, you'll lose health. Sometimes you might find food on the ground. If you eat it, you'll get health back. And there's a couple of really, really cool things, which I feel like if I said them, it would actually be a spoiler compared to when I found them, and they were genuine fun surprises. So I'm not going to tell you what those things are. Just know there are some surprisingly elaborate events that can occur between levels. You can also eventually unlock a shop or more and use the money that you acquire from levels, whether you find them like lying around on the ground or sometimes from destroying objects. If you get the right object and item lets you do it, you can use that money to buy items at the shop to make your experience better, such as the ability to do air dashing or the ability to stab up and down. You'll want to buy these objects because, one, what else are you going to do with the damn money? And two, it's just good to have the kit built out, and some of these abilities you'll actually need to progress through the game. The thing that I like the most about this, though, aside from obviously just the general humor and the matcap graphics and music, because good God, this man is a gem at this craft, is the fact that you can also find hidden crowns hidden throughout the levels. And these crowns come in a variety of forms, but the most notable one is it's just a crown that might can appear based on certain conditions, like maybe destroy the right object or avoid fighting certain enemies in the level, and a number of other things that might pop up in the game. Some of these methods may even come up as hints in the middle of stage between stages, which you'll have to remember. So when that the level comes along, you know what to do. Sometimes the secret lies in the title of the stage and so on and so forth. But you're going to really enjoy looking for these crowns if you're a completionist type. And there is a room where you can unlock secrets in the event you meet the crown threshold for opening the doors containing said secrets. I really do enjoy this title. I will
I
admit.
A question.
No. I mean, sure.
So are these crowns like the ones you wear on your head or like Crayola?
Oh, not crayons. They're definitely crowns that you would wear on your head, though you, the character, don't wear them on your head. You just keep them in a bag or something.
Oh, okay.
Be kind of interesting if you just had 50 crowns stacked on your head, though. But yeah, like it's a pretty cool game. I love the music. I love the graphics. I like the fact that sometimes you might find yourself scratching your head on how the hell do I get the hidden crown on this level. Other times it's very straightforward, and then you'll unlock additional crown types that can be acquired on stages too, which will incentivize you to go back to levels that you already completed to get new crowns. So there's a lot to mine and acquire in this game. This is from a secret perspective. And the game is a bit bigger than it looks on the surface. I did not run out of hearts, though, so I can't tell you what happens when you run out of hearts, and I hope to never find that out. but with that said, I do very much appreciate this game. I do, as much as I was like, I wish I got another Astalon-esque game, I'm not going to complain about this game existing, too, because it is a lot of fun and one that I think is worth the money.
All right, well, it is a $15 game. Give us your final verdict on Lovish.
This game is a straightforward buy. $15, I think you get a good enough amount of gameplay to justify that cost. And again, the music and the graphics are just a gem.
Very good. All right, let's move on. Next up, Reluted. Developed and published by Nyamakop. Nyamakop. Released February 10th on Series X and S, Xbox, PC, Steam, and Epic for $14.99. A crew, a job, a plan, and Reluted. Toss those ingredients together and you've got yourself a classic heist, but with a few twists. Your crew members are everyday citizens with pretty normal careers from different countries in Africa. The job is to liberate African artifacts from Western museums. And the plan? That's up to you to create. Aki, what is Reluted?
Okay, so this is a platforming strategy game, we'll call it. You play as a young woman who has been called to come save her dumb fuck brother because he's a dumbass. And he's gotten himself in trouble. So you have to go in and do all your gymnastic speed runny stuff to go save him. Woohoo! And then he pulls you into his life of crime. Dun, dun, dun. Turns out he and your grandmother and some other schmuck that used to work for your grandmother or was a student of your grandmother or something, who fucking knows, have all decided to go and steal from museums and private collectors. And the reason for this is that a law was passed that stated that anything on display that belonged to Africa needed to be repatriated back to them, i.e. it needed to be sent back to them because it's fucking theirs. You can't just steal it and keep it. It's time to send that shit back. So a bunch of places decided to do what a bunch of places realistically would exactly do. They decided, well, since the loophole is it has to be on display, let's just take it and hide it and make it private to where only rich people can come see it. Woohoo! So you've decided, well, you know, it's been years since this law came into effect and next to nothing has been sent back, so, fuck these guys. We're just gonna go and take it. Because guess what? They can't report it stolen, because then they'd have to report that they were hiding it away and now sending it back, which was illegal in the first place. Yay! So, yeah, y'all decide to start hitting museums and private collectors to steal basically everything not nailed down, because fuck these people. And, yeah, as you continue through the game, you get new characters who can do new things, and you don't play as any of them. Instead, they'll show up in certain areas around the map, and you get to determine different things that they can do. For instance, your brother is able to pick locks because he has a robot arm and he can hack into things with that somehow. And so he's able to open doors that you can't open, or if doors are attached to switches, you can get it to shut a door to open another door, and then you can send him to go open that door. That way, anytime that switch is moved, it opens both doors instead of just one. Things like that. You eventually get a character that can, that's a very acrobatic, even more so than you, and he has like a little grappling hook, so he can set that up so when you run up to him, he'll grab you by the waist and fling both of you up real quick, Batman style, through an area, or he'll catch you as you jump off of something and throw you through a window you can't break otherwise. Things like that. You end up with like 6 people on your team altogether. Not all of them actually go into levels, because like there's individuals like your grandmother. She's kind of a back-end person. She's helping you find these places rather than actually be in the levels. You end up with 3 people that go into the levels with you. And I'm not going to bring up the third one. You can find it out on your own. And yeah, every level there's certain artifact or artifacts that you need to obtain. And then there's always some optionals that you can pick up and others that for some reason, instead of picking up, you just scan them. I don't know why you aren't stealing those too, but whatever. And when you get back home, you end up with this base that you go to, and every individual character has a different floor, different area that they tend to be in. You can talk with them. It just adds a little life to the area. It doesn't actually impact anything, no matter how you answer them or what have you. But there's also 2 other places in the base that are kind of cool. There's an area that holds all your ill-gotten goods, because at the end of the game, you're supposed to, I guess you're going to submit this to the museum in Africa. That's where all this stuff is supposed to be getting sent back to. So you have all this stuff looted, and you can go in there and actually read up information about all these artifacts. Because all these artifacts are, I'm they seem to be real, because like when you're getting information about the artifacts and stuff in game as part of like the planning phase, it'll bring up pictures and they look like the real pictures, which is very awkward when everything else is very cartoony. And then suddenly they're talking about this person, bring up a picture, and it looks like a picture from forever ago. And it's like, oh, okay. Wasn't expecting that. So that's really cool. And it also allows you to replay the mission where you got that and so on and so forth in case you missed some of the scanned items or you didn't pick up all the items that all the optional items that you could have picked up, things like that, just so you can recollect all that stuff because there was achievements for that. So they're doing things smart. There's also a VR place that, again, also allows you to replay levels. It doesn't just let you play just the actual missions. It allows you to replay different areas, like collecting all of the different characters is technically missions as well, and you can replay those in the VR area as well as different pieces of training, just in case you've left the game for a while and you're like, I don't remember what this character does anymore and I'd like to know before I go into the mission, just so I don't fuck things up by being stupid. You can replay those that give you training on the different characters and how to use them effectively. So it's really nice like that. The voice acting is amazing. The art is fantastic. It's really quick to play because when you actually go into levels, you're setting up how to steal everything, including interacting with like robot guards and breaking open different windows that aren't attached to like security systems so you can quickly get through things, or setting up boxes or tables under doors that after an alarm goes off would shut, that way you can still get through it, things like that. It's really fun. And then once you know, get caught by something, either by breaking a window by accident or picking up one of the artifacts or something, then it's a chase level. You have to pick up all the artifacts that you have to pick up, as well as any of the optional ones if you choose to, whilst getting through the end of the level, because it is timed at that point. So you have to set up all this stuff first to get yourself a nice pathway through that you're like, okay, now I can get the fuck out of here. And my pathway from this artifact to this artifact to this artifact will also lead me the fuck out of the building here, and I can just zip to it. Because whilst you're running, robots will come after you, flying robots that shoot at you and stuff. So you have to stay out of its way by just running faster and stuff. It's really fun, and there's a lot of parkour in this game. It's all hardcore parkour, and I love it.
We know you're a fan of your stealing and stealth games. $15 on Relooted. What do you think of this one?
100% a buy it. This is a fantastic game. I have trouble imagining somebody who isn't going to end up having fun with this game. That's how good it is.
Very good. All right, next up, Our Adventurer Guild, developed by Green Guy, published by Ultimate Games. Ultimate Games was also nice enough to hook us up with a couple extra copies of this to give away. Should we give one away right now?
Fucking yes.
Wait.
Fucking yeah. Let's do a giveaway right now. Everyone in chat, pay attention. Giveaway, draw, congrats. Courtesy of Ultimate Games to Horror Acolyte, who entered for Injury. So Injury is going to get a copy of Our Adventurer Guild, developed by Green Guy, published by Ultimate Games, released January 27th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $14.99. Your friend, the former guildmaster of the declining Adventurer Guild, has died and named you his successor. Will you lead the guild to fame and glory, or will it finally disband under your leadership? Our Adventurer Guild is a game about managing an adventurer guild. Accept quests to raise the reputation of your guild. Lead your adventurers in quests to explore and battle foes in turn-based tactical combat. Keep an eye on the mood and relationship of your adventurers, and raise and grow them and watch as they make a name for themselves. Pernell, tell us about your time with Our Adventurer Guild.
So, Our Adventurer Guild can best be described as a game that takes place in two phases. There is basically a sim or management phase, and there's also a dungeon exploration slash action, battle, tactical combat phase. So the guild phase or sim phase is where you're pretty much managing the day-to-days of the guild's actions, because your overall goal is to increase the clout of the guild and make it a notable guild in the land. But that's going to come through a series of steps involving fulfilling a series of quests, hiring, you know, adventurers of renown, or hiring adventurers that lack renown, and then making this that they build such renown up. And also, of course, making sure you don't go broke in the process. So you'll spend time going to doing things like going into the bar to hiring new adventurers that can join your party. Those adventurers come with their own stats, classes, starting equipment, and I guess various traits, some traits being good, some traits being bad. You might have an adventurer who loves pain, at which point they get a boost whenever they take damage in combat because they just get a kick out of it. But at the same time, they have, like, for example, maybe like an accuracy detriment or something to counteract that. Or you might get an adventurer that just loves being an alcoholic, and that might factor in to their combat in a number of ways as well. The part of the dance, I think, in my opinion, is coming across various adventurers and hoping that you didn't just get a character who has high rolled stats because their traits suck. And that has happened more than a few times. But sometimes you just kind of go with it in hopes that they'll grow and change as people as they advance as characters. But in addition to that, I'll go into why this could occur later in the game. But there's also the ability to take your adventurers that you've hired to said bar to get them beers. And this is a good way to improve their mood when said mood decides to take a tank for the worst. But in addition to that, you might be outfitting your characters, which of course costs money. Various items might just be things you can buy for finance, like potions and the like. But then various forms of equipment you have to take to your town, your guild blacksmith, and he can improve you or get you items by way of using money in addition to goods you find on your adventures to produce equipment for you. There's the training grounds where you go to do class changes or learn skills. The dormitory where you can go to actually level up once you've obtained enough experience to perform said level up. And an alchemist to produce potions. And a memorial where your dead heroes will be immortalized. Because when they're dead, they stay dead. There is no Phoenix Downs in this game, baby. So keep that in mind when you take characters out in the field and make some willy-nilly choices with them. But eventually, you got to go out and make the donuts, because if you can't afford to pay for your guild by the end of the week, your guild members will take a very serious mood hit, and that will affect your gameplay too. So don't let that happen. So one of the main ways to progress the game and also just to earn money is to go on quests and take on two types of quests. There are the types that existed in games like Final Fantasy Tactics, where you'll get a request, you can send adventurers on it, and they'll just stay gone for a couple of days. And then after that comes by, you'll get a report letting you know if they succeeded or not. And if it did, you'll get the rewards from it. But the other type of quest, the more, you know, player-involved quest, will allow you to do... Sorry about that. Something's in my damn throat.
There's a bug?
Yeah. No, it's a frog. Ribbit!
The frog will catch the bug.
That's right. That's what he used to get on his ass. He used to get off his ass and work. But you can either, it'll be the story quest or just a generic quest. But you take a generic quest. Sometimes they have a deadline for a clock, so if you don't do it before the time runs out, it's just unavailable to you. But these quests can range from anything from exploring a map to killing certain monsters to finding a certain number of items, etc., etc. And when you choose one, you will be told if there are any conditions associated with the map, such as lower level monsters or an extra heaping of traps littered in the map or whatever, as well as the rewards associated with it. You can outfit the quest with the party members you want to take along, and then the game will dump you into the environment. It can be a cave, forest, whatever. At this point, the game takes on a grid movement system. The entirety of your party is made up of one moving token unit. You can move around, hop about, and for each step you take, any enemies or NPCs that are on the map, should they be ones that move, will move along with you in that sense. Sometimes you'll come across objects you can destroy, dismantle, and break down to get items for crafting, or items that you can sell later. You'll also come across the occasional monster. And when you come across a monster, the game will then change again to a tactical battle screen, a la Final Fantasy Tactics or Fire Emblem. Not Fire Emblem, Final Fantasy Tactics. So at this point, now you have to worry about the abilities your characters have. Characters come in a variety of classes, like the basic ones like a defender or a mage or an archer. And each of those characters have their own skills, of which they can learn more as you level up and gain skill points. And even additionally, advance to advance in higher advanced class structures when they reach the high enough levels to promote themselves, if they live long enough. Womp, womp, womp. But, yeah, that's right. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. So when you get into combat, there is a turn order based on like initiative and speed. And when your character's turn comes up, they have the ability to spend action point to move. And then they have action points that can be allocated to performing various skills, of which even your base attack factors in as a skill. You can use items as you'd expect. Thankfully, in this game, it's one of those games where items can be thrown to use on other characters if you don't want to just use a potion on yourself. They'll perform these actions, and then it'll be the opponent's turn when they come up in their queue structure. Now, this game has HP, which, duh, you know what HP does, and SP, which, duh, you know what SP does, but bravery points are something that are not typical in games like this. They can be, but they don't show up all that often. Bravery points are an additional element that can be used for a few things. Let me rephrase that. They're used for one thing, but then the other thing is not a use so much as a need or a function. They can be used to perform brave actions. Brave actions are special abilities that can turn the tide of battle when needed, and they are generally very good things. For example, you can't really risk having a missed hit on this particular attack, because if you miss, the enemy's going to whop the crap out of you. Well, guess what? There's an ability to just make a guaranteed hit using heroic hit. Use your bravery points, pull off the skill, and then bam, you're going to do the damage that is necessary to win or with the day. But why not? You might be asking yourself, why not just burn through all of your bravery points like you would any other item in the game? For now, I mean SP and HP. Well, there's HP that you can use to be hit with potions, and there's SP which can be hit with mana potions. Bravery points are much tougher to replenish, usually through like character actions or through events. But the higher your BP is, the better your character will perform in battle, period. Like just stats and such. The lower they get, the opposite can occur. In addition to that, they might come to a point where if your BP runs out, your character will just perform like hot buttered trash. And if your character ends up taking a whopping attack in combat and they don't have the BP to potentially, you know, evade it or kind of shrug it off with like a, I can still do this, I'm not dead yet, well, they'll die. So there is a reason to kind of balance between using the BP when needed, but also not letting yourself go through a threshold of like 30 or so BP. Play smart, not stupid. You fulfill the quest objective. Oh, I should also mention, sometimes you'll come across events on these maps too, which can yield to a variety of effects. Think, I guess like an event card in a RPG or board game that resembles Dungeons and Dragons. You might come across a scenario where you might hear, you know, combat noises on the battlefield, and the game will say, do you want to go see what the hell that is? And depending on what you decide to do will determine what a result may be. It could be something cool, like a reward. It could be nothing at all. It could be combat or something worse. But that is some flavor that can be added to the game to determine, you know, makes it like an adventure a little different from the last one. And some of the events that can occur can be pretty freaking hilarious too. Like, you know, coming across a group of bandits on the field, and then you decide, oh, I want to mimic the bandits and make them think I'm one of them so I don't have to fight them. And then you just tell each other your life stories and have a nice conversation and get lots of experience points from it. Because thankfully, sometimes being the nice, friendly diplomat who's also lying through his teeth is more difficult than battling them, and the game rewards you for that. I appreciate that thing. I'm going to be honest about something here, and that is that I have been curious about this game for a while, but there was never really anything that made me want to go, you know, I want to just go ahead and pull the trigger on this. I'm not sure what it was. Maybe it didn't flash in like that specific level of art to me at that particular time, or maybe it was just something like I maybe thinking I had other things I had to play, and I'll come back to this later. But I'm glad I got to review it, because this is one of those cases where I can say I can recommend this to other people to potentially not make the same mistake I had made up to this point, because I think this game is solid. It is unexpectedly good. The music is decent. I'm not going so far as to say it blows my socks off, but it's decent music. The graphics are charming.
And I just punched my mic. Ugh.
Well, that's not good.
I went to wave to George and Chad. George and Richard popped down. I'm like, hi, guys. And punched my mic because I'm idiot.
But the graphics and execution are nice looking. I like the character art. The writing is pretty funny. Sometimes it'll annoy me because of things like, for example, the main character and the supporting guild, the guild master's wife who's helping you along. They hate each other, and literally every dialogue they have with each other is just like, I hate you. I hate you too. Go kill yourself. Okay, I guess no.
But do you hate this game?
Well, I think if you haven't glimpsed by this point in the review, I don't know what to freaking tell you. But for those who just want to hear the answer, I think this game is actually very, very good. I believe it deserves more love. I'm not sure what kind of love is getting out there, but whatever it is, I think it deserves more of it. So I'm going to give this game a genuine, well, you do the thing you do.
$15. Tell me what you're going to tell me.
This is easily a buy it recommendation. If you're craving a tactics game, as long as you're okay with the fact that it's got a not too aggressive sim layered on top of it, I think you're going to have a good time playing this game. Just know that you're not going to just be having your three favorite party members all the time, forever and ever, outfitted with the best gear. You're going to have to play smart, not so stupid.
Well, again, if you are on the fence with this one, Ultimate Games was nice enough to hook us up with codes, and I think we should give another one away. What do you think?
I guess so. No.
Grant, what do you think? Should we give another copy of the game away?
No, don't give it to Grant. I was joking, you Muppet. Give the damn code away. These people would love it.
Grant, tell me what Purnell won't. Purnell doesn't want to give games away. What do you think we should do, Grant?
Give him the Purnell.
Giveaway draw. Congrats to Sir Khaled, who just won a copy of Our Adventurer Guild, courtesy Ultimate Games. We will have one more to give away at the end of the music, but we got one final game to talk about tonight that is called Too Many Tiny Army, developed by Guillotine. I like that name. Published by Abiding Bridge. It released January 30th on Steam for $4.99. In this survivors-like game, summon an army of tiny Too Minis to battle waves of forest demons. Each Too Many has its own movement patterns. It's up to you to manage this merry mess to create an unstoppable force. Purnell, give us the quick rundown of what is Too Many Tiny Army.
That's good. It will be short because the game is also short-ish. So Too Many is a survivors-like where you control a little forest critter who is trying to survive a violent, monstrous onslaught that is trying to corrupt his forested home. And his support force du jour are the Too Minis. Little cute critters who do a variety of different things, but all those things can be summarized with one word: fighting. So the way that this works is that at the beginning of a game, you will choose three Too Minis that will accompany you into that particular run. Eventually, you might be able to get more of those, but I'll get to that in a minute. Once the game starts, if you're familiar with basic survivors, you'll be plopped onto a map and enemies will start to appear. You will start, I'm trying to remember, mostly you start with a few Too Minis, but they'll basically do fighting for you with your default starting Too Many. And eventually you'll kill enough guys to level up. At this point, when you level up your character, you will get a choice of a number of different upgrades. And these upgrades can either be a new Too Many type entirely, if you haven't gotten all three Too Minis that you wanted yet, that you selected early on, or you might get an additional number of Too Minis of a certain type. So let's say, for example, you have Angry Too Many. Angry Too Minis will just run away from you and start beating up enemies that are within your proximity. They're uncontrollable. They just do what they want because they're fucking angry. eventually, when you level up, you might get the opportunity to get five Too Many that are angry as opposed to the starting three Too Many that are angry. That's just more angry Too Many beating things up. Can't go wrong with that. Or you might get a follower Too Many, which will just kind of follow you around. But if enemies trip over them, they'll take damage. So you might get something like that. Or you might get a scenario where the game will say you lose two Too Many of a certain type. But in exchange for that, you'll get a bonus element to their attack. Like maybe the angry Too Many will do, 5% more damage or whatever. At which point you might be like, what is this totally worth it? Because even though I get less, all the ones I have left do more damage. So cumulatively, that's better, right? And you'll basically do things like that over and over and over again until the level's over. However, as you're walking around a level, you may have occasionally come across items on the ground that might give you a temporary buff, like speed boosting or invincibility. You might come across an item that might just give you a free one or more too many of a certain or certain types, and so on and so forth. They give you the reason to not just hang in one small zone collecting experience point orbs, because it is very easy to do something like that. Not that the game is easy, but that it is an easy thing to do if you want to do that. Eventually, at the end of the level, you might fight a boss, and if you can defeat the boss, congratulations, you won the run. You will get currency based on how well you perform, being the experience points you picked up throughout the level, and you can then spend those orbs back at the main screen to unlock additional too many types or additional upgrades to your character as a whole, including the aforementioned being able to have more than three types of too many's on a certain run. This game, I feel like I say this a lot lately, but this game also surprised me in how fun it was. I generally find myself feeling kind of done with survivor types. Not that they're bad, but I've played a lot of them. But I kind of like the fact that this is the one where your character isn't doing the actual fighting. It's the little critters that are coming along with you. They're doing the fighting. You're just trying to. And I also need to mention, now that I mentioned that statement there, that even though you don't control the Chuminis, there is one thing you do get to control regarding their performance. And that is like a space, like a super attack type that each Chumini has. It's unique to each type. And they each have their own cooldowns as well. Yes, right. Unique.
We heard that.
Chris, when you need them. Unique. It's interesting. Ooh, the what?
That was unique.
Oh, that was unique. That guy knows what's up. He was right. He knows.
That's from wrestling.
And you know me in wrestling. So fluid. But the interesting thing about this is that what? I am lost.
That's a guy's laugh.
Can I continue? He was laughing, but I am so confused. I'm going to start talking now. We'll see what happens. beat you to it. So the individual abilities that the Chuminis have their own respective cooldowns associated with them. One might be 30 seconds, one might be 20 seconds, and they can change based on the abilities you earn through level ups too. When you press the special ability button, every ability that has reached this cooldown point will trigger simultaneously, and then those cooldown numbers will reset. Any abilities that did not reach their cooldown yet, their cooldowns will also reset to their original number. So the game makes you kind of do a certain dance where you're forced to determine when is the right time to get the most bang for your buck. Do you want to trigger all your abilities at once? Do you want to trigger the one that's needed right when that time occurs just to keep going, et cetera, et cetera? And therein lies the rub of the dance. So I think this game is a lot of fun. I wasn't expecting it to be what it was. I also was kind of expecting to be kind of burnt out on the whole genre at this moment in time. But I think having the characters kind of follow you around and do their own thing while you kind of slightly facilitate their antics has a nice little change that I haven't experienced in this style of game. And I enjoyed it. My one gripe, though, is kind of neutered by the fact that the game is dirt cheap, is the fact that I wish there were more levels and more enemy types and such, because there's only like one map and there's not a ton of enemies in the game that'll show up. You'll pretty much see them all within a decent amount of time, a short amount of time, rather, I should say. But the time you spend with the game is a great time. And there's nothing saying that they won't come along the line and say, this game did well. We're going to add more levels to it and maybe increase the price if need be. But otherwise, here's some more levels and more too minis and such. I feel like you can get more mileage out of this game.
Yeah, under the Steam page on the store, it does say what you won't find in our survivors like for now. Different maps or levels, different playable characters, and endless replayability through unlock. So I guess they're just, you know, telling customers, keep your expectations in check. This isn't going to have everything that other games have, but again, it's a $5 game. So it's not like they're asking for mountains of riches for this one.
Oh yeah. And I will say it doesn't have to have infinite replayability. I mean, I'm definitely not the guy that needs that much, but I will also say sometimes when you appreciate a game, when what it does, it's fair to want more of it. It doesn't have to be infinite. Yeah. Just like, hey, here's another level or two, or here's another couple new enemy types since we had time to make them, you know? So,
and I know you played on it. How did it perform on the Steam Deck?
Without a hitch. It performed perfectly well.
Very good.
Like, yeah, I didn't come across any hiccups or anything like that.
Steam page just has it listed as playable, so I guess they got
get the
verification, but it works fine. So,
yeah, just more people need to go through and give it the request. I buy games that straight up say unsupported, and sometimes it works out, sometimes it does not. And it's sad when it does not, because I bought that game, I think Aki reviewed it a few weeks ago, Onirism. I bought that game on Steam like months, like actually years ago, well before it hit 1.0. And it was always unsupported. I was like, it'll become supported eventually. It never did. It never did. And it performs like terrible garbage. So, ugh. But
all right. Sometimes it doesn't. Chew Mini is $5. What do you think of Chew Mini Tiny Army?
I haven't said it in a long time, and it's fun to say it now. Fuck it. Why not? It's $5. You'll have a good time. It's short but sweet. And what's not to beat about that? It's fun. Fuck it. Why not? Get it.
And just to show a comparison on how, like, Square Enix could sell millions of copies a game, and they're like, this was a failure. This team that released Chew Mini, they put a post on their Steam page celebrating 1,000 copies sold. So, A, congrats. I'm going to buy it to celebrate that. And two, good luck on your future projects. We hope that this is a good start and that y'all become successful. But $5, it seems like this is a good starter. So
yeah, they're going to move on to Chew Mega.
Chew Mega. Chew Mini 2. Chew Too Mini.
You choose me? That's right, Chew Mini.
Chew Fast, Chew Furious.
Play it. I'm in. Let's do it. I want Chew Fast, Chew Furious. I want that game next.
Oh, with that, we are done with this episode. Big thanks to you two for hanging out through to the end. Big thanks to Grant for coming on, chilling with us. Big thanks to Bree for coming on, hanging out with us for the beginning part of the show. Grant. Grant had to take care of his cat, so he's like, aww, lighting out. Cat is exploding. Love you. So
oh, God, that doesn't sound good. Yeah. That sounds gross, actually.
Music this episode, since we covered ourselves some Carmageddon, why don't we end it with some Super Mario Kart? Oh, we're gonna go with the heavy stuff
for that,
because Carmageddon's a heavy metal kind of game. You need some heavy metal kind of music from Mario Kart, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Bowser's Castle from the 1UPS.
Waluigi pinball cover. Oh, that's not Waluigi Pinball.
Yeah, but Carmageddon is like heavy metal. Bowser's Castle is heavy metal. The 1UPS.
Do you remember?
They're not quite heavy metal, but they'll get there.
Do you remember back when we were talking about Darksiders Genesis, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm either going to spend a lot of time on this thing,
or
I'm
going to get it right away.
No, I was one, because it's all platforming, like pixel perfect platforming. I was one jump before getting it. I'm nice. So annoyed.
Very good.
Oh, fuck my life.
Pernell, any final words to end the show?
Honestly, I wish I had some. I'm running on fuse right now. Play more board games. How about that?
I'll just laugh at Aki.
Video games are cool too. I wouldn't do that. That guy would, though, but I don't know.
And that laugh just was perfectly timed, because I just died right when that went off.
Okay, that's funny.